The Jumpstart Discoveries, a novel by B.D. Harrell. An unexpected visitor. Christopher Michaels was bothered by the insistent buzzing of the helicopter, which seemed to be intent on interrupting his train of thought. He was at home, having stopped at a rodeo mart on the way back from work, when the noise crept into his consciousness. Instead of just ignoring what he considered to be a rude intrusion into his evening routine, Christopher decided to go out on what passed for his balcony to see if he could determine what the hubbub was about. Police helicopter, he snorted. The machine sent down a powerful beam of light which swept the ground underneath it. After watching the helicopter crisscross the general area for half an hour or so, Christopher decided that he had had enough excitement for the night. He wondered if the circling helicopter had anything to do with the girl he saw and the white Impala pulling into the parking space directly in front of him at the same time he was pulling out of the Rodeo Mart parking lot. She looked familiar. He was sure that he'd seen her before, loitering near the pharmacy where he worked. He'd seen hundreds of girls, women really, come in, have a prescription filled, then file out, wondering if he'd ever have a chance of a conversation other than to advise the occasional patient about drug interactions. If his father lived nearby, his father would likely hit on some of them, maybe sleep with one or two of them, and then find another one next month. Christopher knew his father was like that. Was like that, or so he said. Glenn Michaels went to some small town in Ohio, found a woman who tamed him, and then settled down. She probably didn't know Glenn Michaels' reputation as a serial philanderer. That's what Christopher's mother called his father, a serial philanderer. Odd that she'd judge her now ex-husband as a philanderer when she walked out of their marriage after having an affair with the 8th grade algebra teacher at the Buffalo Gulch Middle School. The girl in the car. He'd seen her face. He was sure of it. There would always be tomorrow when the people in the morning news would give a hint about what was going on with a helicopter circling his neighborhood late at night. He stepped back inside, turned off most of the lights except for his bedside lamp and a small lamp by his front window. He took off his clothes and relaxed. The letter on his bedside table was still sitting there. The return address was his father's, this time done in a feminine hand. The woman who tamed him, no doubt, he sighed quietly while debating whether he should read the contents again. He put the letter aside and turned out the bedside light. The image of the girl in the Impala parked bumper to bumper to his car at the rodeo mart briefly came to mind again. He shook off the image and eventually drifted off into a deep slumber. The knocking on the door started as part of some nondescript dream. He became aware that the knocking he heard in his dream was someone knocking on his door in the middle of the night. It wasn't a demanding knock. It was more of an insistent knock, proffered by someone who, while waiting an answer, wanted to be quiet enough not to attract the attention of the neighbors. Christopher slipped into a pair of white cotton briefs before opening the door to his apartment. He supposed that perhaps he should exercise caution by looking outside to see who might be knocking. It didn't dawn on him, and whoever it was who was attempting to intrude may not have had the best interest in mind. He was just going to open the door. A woman slipped in the moment he disengaged the latch. She pushed Christopher out of the way, shutting the door and deadbolting it behind her. "Oh, thank you, thank you, thank you," the woman gushed. She's about his age, give or take a year or two. Dressed in blue jeans and a western shirt and a muted blue plaid, unbuttoned to reveal enough cleavage to hold his attention. She wore very little makeup, perhaps a touch of lipstick, but not much else. Her general appearance struck him as slightly disheveled, as he would expect someone to be at this early hour of the morning. "Are you in trouble? You all right?" Christopher asked. "I don't want them to see me. Look out the window. Do you see anyone?" She sounded panicked, out of breath. He took a quick peek past his curtains and out the window to see an empty courtyard. There was nobody there. Perhaps the young woman who had forced her way into his apartment was part of an elaborate dream. One of two things would happen next, he thought. Either she would hit him on the back of his head, knocking him unconscious so she could rob him blind, or she would slip her hands into his briefs as a prelude to a fantasy developing in his head of full-bore lovemaking. Since there was nothing for the woman to steal, except for maybe a television and a pair of $20 bills he kept in his wallet, the prospect of an unexpected sexual encounter seems to be the more likely scenario. "I don't see anything," he told her. She let out a sigh of relief. "Thanks. I thought maybe they had finally tracked me down." "Who was after you?" Christopher asked, turning toward his unexpected visitor. I'm not quite sure. I was with my date. We were driving out Gessner when he decided to stop at a carryout. I chose to wait for him in the car. When I saw men in ski masks going inside a few minutes later, I decided to get the hell out of Dodge. One of them could have seen me." "You drove off, you drove off in the car, abandoned your boyfriend?" "Well, he wasn't my boyfriend. He was just some guy I used to work with. Last I saw him, he was talking to the cops." "But you just told me that you ran away," Christopher pointed out. "Well, I did, but I went back. I parked the car and took the bus back out. I saw him out the window when we passed by."
"You saw him from the bus?"
"Yes," the woman confirmed. "I saw him in the parking lot of the Rodeo Mart on Gessner when I rode by on the bus." "The date went badly, I take it." Christopher sat down at the table in his living dining area, partly to get his bearings and partly to cover the fact that his fantasy about her resulted in a partial erection. "Yeah, a bad date," she answered, sitting on a chair opposite of his. "I've been out of it for damn near 3 hours trying to think of what to do next. My date said he was planning to take me further out Gessner to this place where we could go line dancing. I got the impression that all he wanted to do was get drunk and screw. You have anything to drink?" "Maybe a beer," he offered. "More likely you'll find cold filtered water and a fresh jug of milk I picked up at the Rodeo Mart a little earlier." He studied her ass when she got up from the table. She went to his refrigerator and extracted a bottle of beer he didn't realize he still had. He studied her face when she came back to the table. He thought that he may have seen her somewhere, but he couldn't quite place where. "I found this," she said, twisting open the bottle of Lone Star and taking a long swig. "I'll pay you back later." "If you're thirsty, the beer won't do you much good," Christopher scolded his guest.
"How do you know? Are you a doctor or something?"
"No, I'm a pharmacist. I know these things."
"Oh, so you deal drugs?"
Her face lit up in a wide smile. He could tell that she was attempting to make light of the situation. She took another pull off the long neck. "I deal in legal drugs," he clarified. "I fill prescriptions at a pharmacy, right?"
"Beer's a legal drug," she encountered.
"Well, you're right. Beer's a legal drug, but it's the alcohol that's in the beer that's more properly the drug. If you're thirsty, the alcohol will make you even thirstier."
"Oh, well, live and learn," she said, before emptying the bottle.
"So, what should it be next, water or milk?" "Water would be the better choice. It's on the bottom shelf in the clear pitcher." The woman got up, went to the refrigerator, extracted the water pitcher, then sat it down on the empty counter next to the sink. "You have any glasses?"
"Look in the cupboard on the far left. I don't have glasses. I only have plastic cups."
She pulled down a cup, poured herself some water, then brought it over to the table. "You said that you work at a pharmacy, right? You wouldn't work over the one over by Sharpstown, would you?" Christopher wasn't sure whether he should answer the question or not. There was something familiar about the woman, but he couldn't quite place her. If he admitted to working at the Sharpstown store, as she correctly guessed, his anonymity would be blown. He wondered if a friend had set him up. It's time to test her story.
"You said you'd been running for nearly 3 hours because of a robbery at the Rodeo Mart. Were you running from the helicopters in the area around, say, 10:30 or so?"
"They were probably looking for the guys in the masks, or they might have been looking for me. I'm not sure. I found a place to hide in the laundromat next to the club down the street. I fell asleep, and when I woke up, it was 3 hours later."
"Did you think of calling the cops yourself?" Christopher asked. "I don't have my phone with me," she said. "From the number of cops I saw when I passed by on the bus and the fact that there was a helicopter involved, I'm guessing that there was a shooting. Charlie might have tried to blame me for whatever happened. After all, I took his car and fled the scene." "Charlie, was he your date?"
"Yeah, Charlie."
"He could just as well presume that you guessed what was happening and got away so you could pick him up later," Christopher pointed out.
"No, I know the son of a bitch. He'd rather blame me to make himself out as a victim, or he would claim I was a hostage. It would not have occurred to him that I would take the car and to have him walk to get back to his hotel."
Christopher thought about what she said for a moment.
"That fellow sounds like to me like he's the perfect jackass," he told her. "I take it that he was full of himself."
"He told me in so many words he was going to the rodeo mart to buy beer and rubbers."
"And he expected you to wait in the car until he got back?"
"Yeah," she smiled. "He's pretty damn dumb."
"And this was the rodeo mart just down the street," Christopher concluded.
"Yeah, that one."
"And this happened around 10:30, he surmised again, just to keep a timeline in his head.
About then,
"Damn, I must have just missed it. I was right there before 10. Damn."
Christopher got up to recover a cup that he had left on the kitchen counter so that he could have a drink himself.
"You were there?" she asked.
"I pulled out of the parking lot at maybe 5 till 10.
"Well, you were driving an old guy's car, weren't you? Was it your green four-door that pulled out of the parking space while we were coming in?"
"Oh, that would be me."
A light went off in his head. She was the woman he'd seen when he left the parking lot of the rodeo mart earlier in the evening.
"I take it that you and your date were in the white sedan."
"Yeah, that was Charlie and me."
Christopher sat down with his cup of water.
"It's time to pay the rent on the beer," the young woman suddenly announced. "Would your wife mind if I used your bathroom?"
"I'm not married. I live alone. Knock yourself out."
When she got up from the table to go to the bathroom, he looked her over to see what else might not quite fit her story. "She said something about going line dancing," he observed. "So why is she wearing running shoes, not boots?"
He decided that he needed to put something more on than the pair of white briefs he had thrown on before admitting her to his apartment. He went to the other side of the partition which separated the living area from his sleeping area, then slipped on a t-shirt and a pair of running shorts he had in a heap by the side of the bed.
"Can I borrow a t-shirt, please?"
The woman's hand appeared from a crack in the door to the bathroom. Christopher drew a clean shirt from his chest of drawers to hand to her. She came out a few minutes later, clad only in the t-shirt and a pair of panties. He sat back down at the table to hide his obvious excitement.
"Hadn't you put your jeans back on?" he asked.
"Why? I'm not going anywhere."
"But I need to get some sleep. If you have an extra blanket, I'll sack out here on the floor."
She picked up a spot on the cheap carpet in front of his television set. The shirt that he had randomly selected from his drawer was one of his favorites. It was black, with the legend Carpe Diem written on it. He stifled an impulse to seize the moment, to tear his shirt from her to initiate a section of lovemaking. It wouldn't be making love, he thought. Who the hell is she in the first place?
"You can sleep in my bed," he heard himself tell her. "I'll get out my sleeping bag and sleep on the floor."
She got up while he was getting out a sleeping bag, then helped him spread it out on the other side of the partition separating the sleeping area from the living area. There were several times he could have sworn that she was deliberately rubbing her body against him to stimulate him.
"Look, if you don't mind," he said, once his bed had been made, "what is your name? Who are you?"
"Tony Anderson," she stated. "Just another drone working in the mall near where you work."
"I'm Christopher Michaels," he returned the courtesy. "Maybe we can talk more in the morning. Right now, I'm wiped out."
"In the morning. We'll see," she said, settling into his bed before he could change his mind. She was softly snoring within just a few minutes. He stayed up a while longer to watch her. After he finally felt tired, he stripped off what he was wearing and hunkered down in a sleeping bag, hoping that maybe she would snuggle in next to him in the morning. She hadn't killed him or robbed him, so he thought the odds were in favor of waking up in one piece after the sun came up.
If he knew what his visitor had in store for him, he might have considered waking her up and taking her home.